today. We'll hop right to it. We are going to cover parking garages being scrutinized due to EV fires and what that means for, I think, development and fire safety in general. Rise Construction in a lawsuit with Divco West on a project out in West Roxbury, Mass Construction's worldwide headquarters. And a uptick. Yes.
Okay.
At least for now.
All right.
So, we can talk about it. So Waltham, I took a look at the project, the property you actually sent me a long time ago, yep. Mike, and yep. I think we had gone back and forth with the building owner, and there was two units we looked at yesterday, and I'm going to hear back from him today on just a little more details on both, and I think I will sign on the dotted line, and hopefully June 1st, the new worldwide headquarters will be Waltham. Yep. New podcast studio will be there. I'm looking forward to it. I don't think we've talked about it on this yet, but we have a new safety podcast that's being done by Jason Edick over at Lee Kennedy, Sean Carvalho at Shawmut, your co-worker, Reg, Doug LaPlante at Turner, and Bob Koontz at Dimio. So pretty exciting. They've got some
It's a good lineup.
Yeah, good lineup of hosts, but also good guests. They're not going to all host at the same time. They're going to bring on, you know, people that they find interesting. You know, Jeremy, Jason has already brought on Jeremy Long from Prime Steel, this woman that runs a Worker Memorials Fund. There's been John Ferrante at AGC talking about their care program, which people might want to look into. AGC here in Massachusetts did a great job with, in conjunction with the GCs that are members, to create like a universal job site orientation. And, you know, they did a hell of a job. And I think they recently won an award nationally for it. So it's worth checking out as well. But let's get to the rundown. I want to start with the parking garages because I think there's the most meat on the bone there. So it was an insurance publication that wrote the article about it. You know, they were talking about a number of large loss fires, major fires in parking garages, all related to EVs, you know, over the last 4 or 5 years. One in particular, in 2023, London had a garage fire that burnt 1,400 cars and caused a building collapse. You know, partial building collapse, but pretty significant. There was a lot in there. Did you guys have any thoughts on that?
No, I mean, it's interesting that, you know, we've gone kind of two ways in the code, you know, with sprinklering now of certain parking garages. I believe the driving force, no pun intended, was because of, you know, what's going on now and the type of vehicles that are in there. You know, obviously we always had vehicles with gas in the garages, but now we have the EV vehicles, the electric vehicles, I should say, that are being parked there. And now open parking garages, which historically only needed a standpipe system, are now required to be sprinkled. And not that even the sprinkler is going to put this fire out. It's just going to assist people to, you know, to get out. So,
yeah, there's, you know, two things you brought up there. So one, historically cars, you know, yes, you had the gasoline that would catch on fire, but for the most part, you had metal, you had steel, aluminum, you had the upholstery, but for the most part, you had a car fire. It stayed isolated. It was, you know, it would get raging if the gasoline caught on fire, but, you know, now you have predominantly plastic vehicles. So the entire vehicle is combustible. They pointed that out in the article. And then to your point, Mike, about the fire protection historically not being needed there, not only now are they saying, okay, we need fire protection, but we might need to change the hazard category. of what's required for sprinklers. So not do you just need sprinkler, you need, even the next level of sprinklers to put it in, kind of layperson's.
But the, something else that's interesting as we move along here with type four construction or the heavy timber construction is you can, under the code right now, you can have a wood frame parking garage. You can have a type four parking garage. It's allowed. It's in there, right? You can have a wood floor in that parking garage in some instances. So, I don't see it happening in any of the larger buildings. And in fact, once you get too big, you can't have it. But I mean, technology and fire protection, the technology sometimes outpaces the fire protection and the code, right? And the ability for people to promulgate or pass codes. So.
Yeah. So go ahead, Reg. Were you going to say something? You look like.
So in the article, all of the fires were in Europe, right? Was that? Have there been any here?
There have been. I know there have been in parking garages here. I don't think to the point where the structure has collapsed or any significant, and somebody out there who knows better can probably correct me, but I don't think there's been any significant collapses or the extent of the damage that's happened over in Europe. But one thing, not to go too far off the rails here, but for people that don't know about EV about electric vehicle fires is you put them out, but they're not out. Essentially, the batteries recycle, and that thing will keep burning. It'll keep starting back up again as it, as it warms up again. It'll recycle and start the fire. And it's a hot, intense fire that's difficult for the fire department to put out. So it's a problem. Obviously, when you have a parking lot situation, you're in an open area, but a parking garage, you're containing. Even in an open parking garage, you have an overhead environment, right? That's containing fire and smoke and whatnot. So, yeah, it's a problem. When we teach, when I teach CSL, we talk about, what use is a parking garage after we teach the uses, and people are like, oh, S storage. Yep. Well, why? And everyone used to say, oh, because of the gasoline. Now 90% of the people say, oh, because of the electric vehicles, right? So you see how the shift is going.
Yeah. I mean, and you talk about hours later, Mike, but there was a battery fire in a factory where they were storing, in a building where they were storing EVs, and Krestowski and I did a full episode on it. It went on for weeks. It was like it was a hazmat scene, and they were trying everything. They were dumping dry Portland cement on top of the batteries, just hoping that would encase it. It ended up being creating a worse problem. And that just shows how, where we're at with this. We just don't know. People just trying things. You hear lots of people, small fires, that they'll put them in 5 gallon buckets of water and just leave it there because it'll just continue to reignite. You can't put it out. And now here's what's interesting. What happens when, right now these are the, between 1 to 10% of the cars in a garage. The 10% is probably pretty darn high, right? What happens when it's a 50% full of EVs, right? Then it
Yeah, I think.
starts getting really crazy. And what are some of the challenges right now from a permitting standpoint? I know the fire department, the fire marshal asked our group last time was, hey, I'm being asked about location of EV chargers in an enclosed parking garage. Does anyone have any information on the best place to put these? And that's where we're at in this process. There's no standard, there's no NFPA standard you could open to talking about where they should go. And if you start to think about it, what do you want? Well, do you want it close to the standpipe so you can get water on it and you can fight it, and you don't have to travel a long distance to go through the garage to get water on it if you're the fire department? But the problem is usually standpipes in there are in stairwells. Do you want the fire at the stair? Probably not. So where do you put these things? And it's probably a good exercise for everybody listening to th think through. We're really at that phase where we know very little, and there's very little even best practices been figured out at this point? And I don't know. I don't have any good answers. It's going to be an issue though.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Rich.
We were so not with electric vehicles, but recently permitting a job, the fire marshal in Boston was asking about like the bike storage plan for the same, similar concept, because we were permitting a bike pavilion, and what is the campus-wide plan for storage of even, because of the scooters and things like that, so.
Yeah, and actually, so Pat Cull, who is like, I want to say, forgive me, Pat, I'm going to butcher your title, but for argument's sake, he's, head of fire prevention at Brown University. And he is right now working on a plan for storage across the campus. Scooters, bikes, any recharging lithium ion battery devices, because think about it, like, is there going to be scooters in dorm rooms everywhere?
Yeah.
Like, what's a lot, how do you manage that, and where do you put them?
Right.
So
Well,
that's one of the questions that came up recently during the permitting process. And
battery bikes are all over the place. Battery scooters, I mean.
this really spins out though, because a lot of people will say, okay, we'll put it in a fire-rated room. And they say, okay, so you want to put all of the extremely hot burning, self-combusting items all together, concentrated load in one room? Like, that's probably not a great, So I've yet to find anybody that has a good answer to this situation. So like, that's kind of the immediate problem when it comes to, development, construction, design and planning, permitting. But then there's the cost associated with this, because this article is about the insurance looking at it and saying, okay, we went from a pretty benign thing like a parking garage that we insure and it's probably a pretty low premium and not much to look at. Now they're having to go through this whole exercise about, where are the charges, how many cars, what does it mean? When I was talking with Mike Procopio in one of the recent episodes, we were talking about, housing and why multifamily is so hard to build right now. And one of the things he brought up is that one of the biggest issues right now is property insurance once it's occupied. So a lot of times people were talking about builders' risk going up through potential fire on a construction site, but he's saying it's been going up on the property side. So what do we have with all these podiums parking under? But now, is that going to start getting scrutinized and make podium buildings with parking under less affordable, or make
More
less sense,
expensive, more expensive.
expensive to n not necessarily build, but to operate? But sorry, I know I'm going, this goes down such a
No,
freaking.
it's that it's right? And this is the way that I'm thinking. So you have the push to get vehicles off the street, off of exterior. Most municipalities, they want them inside. They want them, and they want a smaller footprint. And in fact, they're eliminating the amount of vehicles that are required for most projects. Fine. But an attempt to push them inside, this is parallel to the requirement for EV ready and EV chargers. So now you have a parking garage. And in Massachusetts right now, it's 20% of your parking. They're requiring to be EV ready. Now, some municipalities have ordinances that require you to have the EV chargers at the outset, right? So now you're pushing the number of vehicles. You're saying how many chargers have to be there, right? And you're pushing the vehicles inside. Most people think about the EV chargers, okay, they're outside. We see them in the parking lots and the shopping. But now you're pushing these electric vehicles and you're pushing the chargers inside, and you're just creating a bigger issue, right? By having more electric vehicles and pushing the electric vehicle in the charging inside. So
And this is clearly going to come to a headway if, so this is, like we said, this is a business, this is an insurance industry publication here. If insurance is like, no, we're not insuring that, And the municipality say, yes, they are. They're going inside. And then they say, okay, well, we won't insure your building. Then what do we do? Because
Right.
like we were saying before, if it's, one, two, three of these EVs in there, not a big deal. If it's 20%, that changes things drastically. But going back to price, right? Not just the price of the insurance, but then the price of fire protection going up
Yeah.
from an EV versus a gasoline car. So your fire protection costs go up, your insurance costs go up. It becomes more challenging planning because if the fire departments are going back and forth about where you're going to put the EV chargers, do you put them by the standpipe, but it's near the stairs? Do you put them on the far side of the garage, but then we got to cut through all the cars to get to the EV? What does that mean? If they're having that discussion, they're not issuing your permit,
Right.
right?
Yep.
So you're slowing down permits, you're creating a life safety risk, you're driving up insurance costs, you're increasing fire protection costs, not crazy, but still. And then they brought up a good point in there about historically when the building was it when the parking garage was attached to a building, they looked at it as a good thing
Yeah.
because the building, especially like a hospital, was fully occupied all the time.
Yep.
So there was there, it wasn't like a basically an abandoned lot at night where things could get out of control. But now they're like, if we have one of these fires and that parking garage is, as you see over in Longwood, is bolted next to a hospital, what do you
Yeah.
do?
Yeah. And
Right? Firefighting probably plan of attack changes at that point from bringing down a fire to protecting the existing structure. But then what are you going to have? Fire departments stationed in the hospital running hoses through hospital. What if it's near a sensitive, infection control area? Like it just, this thing spirals
yeah.
bad.
Yeah. And then again, another code issue is we just finally got into the code the automated vehicle parking. It's the first time we've seen it here in Massachusetts. And the national code talks about unoccupied, meaning you put your vehicle in the machine and it parks the vehicle for you. I equate it to essentially the soda machine or the candy machine for vehicles. So we
That
come
got
up with
approved
that.
here.
In the code. It's in the code. So automated vehicle park. We have them. When I was in Boston, like 2007, six, I forget when I started there, we had one downtown that we went out and looked at, a company from Korea. I think it was Shamit actually. It was a company from Korea that had the automated vehicle park, and it was the first time we saw it here. And it was a big deal. And now they had, there's significant more stringent codes on automated vehicle parking. Massachusetts changed the language to make it more restrictive, but it's there, and it's in the code now. Automated vehicle parking, the requirements for firefighting, smoke removal, fire department access, shutdowns, things like that. And again, that was predicated on gasoline vehicles, but knowing that electric vehicles were forthcoming. Now you have a situation where, you're letting your car go. You're pushing it off, and it's more dense parking than you would in a parking garage because you don't have the requirement for the driving lanes and the backing lanes and things like that. So it's there, and we come out with the code at this time where we're dealing with, this electric vehicle issue.
Josue makes a good point. He says not making firefighters' jobs easier. Absolutely not. This whole thing is not making it easier. I think, Mike, if I'm not mistaken, access into the automated parking garages got changed here in Massachusetts.
Yeah, it has to be directly from the exterior. I have a side-by-side slide actually in my 2021 code changes presentation, but yeah, it got slightly changed, as well as the definition slightly changed in Massachusetts, where it says automated parking at the national level, and in the Massachusetts level, it says any automated type parking, which pulls in, I believe, a lot of peripheral parking types.
Yeah, because you've got two things. You have automated, but then you have the ones that are like the Rubik's Cube ones that are,
And that's
you
what
know.
the code was intended for, right? But, unoccupied parking in some people's minds could also mean stackers. You're not occupying that, right? When you're going up to the second level, the vehicle's there on the second level above the vehicle on the first level. So that's a, and even if you've ever driven through New York City, I mean, every time I'm there, I always look and I'm amazed at the 6, 7, 8, 9 tier stacker. They put the vehicles in order to accommodate the small lots at the parking. So that's that I believe is going to be pulled in as well.
Yeah, so it's a major issue for construction development industry, just around Josue's talking about fire prevention and fire planning in the comments. Absolutely. So it's a planning issue. It is a life safety issue. It is a cost issue. On both on paper with insurance, but then actual construction with the fire protection, and there's no answers at this point. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And I'll tell you this much, I can't imagine that whatever NFPA or UL or what's the FM Global, whoever comes up with a standard for this, I wouldn't be shocked if a lot of fire departments push back on whatever they say, because there's so many opinions about it out there. When I've been part of some of these conversations, and people have great points, and there doesn't appear to be any one right answer. So somebody's going to settle on something, but I could see a fire department saying, like, yeah, that's what the standard says, but no way, am I allowing you to, put all the bikes in one room, or whatever whatever it is. So it's going to be interesting to see how all this plays out. Let's go next to the Rise Construction and Divco West lawsuit. Divco West, a lot of folks will know. I believe they were a big part of Cambridge Crossing. Do you know Reg? I know Shamit was there.
Yes, I think Divco West was the main, the only developer that I'm aware of over there.
Yeah, so they were there. A lot of well-known Boston properties they own, New York City, California, I believe. So they're a pretty major player, and right now they are suing Rise for withholding, they're saying, $2.2 million in payments to subcontractors. This is interesting, I think, on a couple of fronts. One, the market has changed. We're starting to see a little bit more lawsuits. It appears like, before I give my comments, what was your takes on this when you read through it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I read this article and just obviously been in the field and followed the as the world turns on LinkedIn as it's come up in the past, so I've been following this a little bit. I thought the article was going to be, when it started, I thought it was going to be the author, kind of saying how the fall of Rise Construction, no pun intended. But it didn't seem to come out that way. But no, I don't know. It seems to me like, look, when you tell kids your eyes are bigger than your stomach, that's the way I'm looking at it here as far as Rise goes. But I'm not quite sure.
The article was also talking about like the tossing of documents, right?
Yeah. You're right, Reg. I thought that was interesting. Divco was claiming that Rise was throwing out documents that were critical. Rise countered with A, it was an accident and we had the super wanted and pulled all the stuff out of the dumpster after, and everything was on Procore anyway. So I think maybe in the olden days you could chuck stuff in the dumpster and
That's what I didn't understand. This isn't, Watergate, for crying out loud, where you have only paper documents. Everything's digital now. So I wasn't following the Watergate part there with dumping the documents in the dumpster. And I wasn't following also why would somebody dumpster dive for something that you could come up with electronically?
Yeah.
Even, so both sides. I wasn't getting DivCo side that there was a document dump. And I wasn't getting Rise's side that, we were in there, pulling stuff out in order to, like, permit cards. They're electronic.
Inspections are online. You still have the card in Cambridge, but.
I don't care if the things are online.
I'm with you. Absolutely.
Because I'm not going to say I might have not gone back to the office and signed off things that I signed in the card.
Oh, yeah.
Once in a while.
But I do, Cambridge, a lot of, like, when they're scheduling inspections and everything, you do get notifications. So, yes, I prefer the paper as well, but.
Yeah, everybody listening, as Mike and I have both been on the other side of the table, keep that card with the signatures on it, because lots of times it does not get signed off in the system. And we see people all the time that are trying to close on their house, and they're coming down to the building department saying, I need these permits signed off. The lawyer's saying there's all these open permits, and the homeowner saying, the building inspector came and signed off. I have the card, but it's not in the system. So
go ahead, Reg.
I guess what I'm saying is Cambridge, I think, does a little bit of a better job with inputting inspections and tracking when they're going, whereas when you guys are on the other side of the counter, not so much. Like Boston, just different.
There's a lot of towns that, but the ability is there not to.
Yeah.
The last couple of towns I was in, I required that you enter the inspection in the field. Right. So everyone has the ability now. You can do it on your phone, enter the inspection in the field. But to your point, Joe, with the, keep the card, I tell people now, take a picture after everything's signed, because guess what happens?
Yeah.
You're cleaning up the job. You replace the window. The card disappears. And now you're scratching to try to find the inspectors to get your signature on the card. So I tell people, as the card gets signed off, take pictures of it. Right.
Yep. Take, and then even when the job is done, you have the picture, have the hard copy, make sure they signed it off in the system. And it wasn't that
process too. A lot of places, even with your certificate of occupancy, you need to provide a copy of the signed card. Yeah. Even though the inspections might be in the portal, you still need to give that information. So
So I'm with you, Reggie. I wasn't saying that people aren't doing it electronically. But that was just my PSA.
But it's not like back in the day where the only thing you had was the yellow
card.
Right.
You
had no other way to track it.
Right.
Or that's what I was thinking.
Paper permits sitting on the inspector's desk. We used to have the stack of permits that were issued on the desk, and that was the actual permit. And if that thing disappeared, you were
hit the shredder.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But anyway.
Yeah.
Well, what's your take here, Joe?
I have a take, but so going back, like, that was my PSA. It was just a PSA to folks. Keep your card, because I would never want anyone to listen to this and say, oh, it was done electronic. I don't need to keep that anymore.
Oh, No, that's not what I was saying.
My takeaway is a couple of things. It's the market's changing, so we're probably going to see more of this. Money is expensive at 7-8%, so the longer you hold on to it, the longer you're sitting on money, the better. You saw that there was a bunch of motions. They all got thrown out by the judge, so the judge looked at all the motions and said this is nonsense about the throwing out of material. Then I think Rise had I don't remember what they were about, complaints about DivCo, and the judge threw that out. So there wasn't much there other than it's a high profile thing fighting. But what jumped out to me, and the reason I wanted to talk about it, or the reason, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it, not only just, hey, markets are changing, but, Rise talked about, and I think it was Jim Grossman in particular, that he kind of admitted, listen, we had some growing pains trying to put our house in order, but one of the things they were looking to do is move away from working from developers for developers and moving to just their other model, which is they have Rise Together, it sounds like, which is they do their own development. And he was saying, then we're not in this thing where we're getting in, how did he word it?
In the middle of lawsuits or
Eliminate,
well, he
yeah,
didn't
help
say
me,
that
instead of
specifically,
help
but
eliminate disputes and
between
stuff like
payments and cash flow, yeah, between contractor and developer.
I think that becomes challenging though, like, because now they've got to bring in the deals. Getting things permitted is, a challenge. So I don't know if that's a great business
But I
model
think
for Rise,
they've
but.
like downsized a lot, so it might just I don't think he's carrying like a huge staff or anything. It might just be a few players in the game, so.
Yeah, they definitely downsized substantially, but I think they've still got a pretty good staff because they got big quick. But you're right, I think it did even say in the article there that part of it was they cut staff or something like 30%
Quarter,
maybe.
something.
Before, yeah.
But maybe that could, like, if if they've downsized and there's only a few people, they can, sustain
Yeah.
their staff and doing their own development.
Yeah, good point. They're a little leaner. I think this one other local developer builder that operates that way. They never lay anybody off, but they're pretty lean. And even if there's nothing going on, they keep their people on for when the next development comes. So yeah, maybe that's the model they go with. But yeah, so Rise and Divco West in that little bit of a lawsuit. This is my time. I'm going to pitch Contrarian Boston. This article, I found it there. In the next article, we're going to discuss on housing permits in Boston, was from Contrarian Boston as well. Like I said, it's the only, you can get the free version. It's the only Substack newsletter thing that I pay for. But for me, it's the only place where they're talking about construction in Massachusetts. So if people are wondering, like, hey, where do you find these things or whatever? Where do you find these topics? A lot of times it's Contrarian Boston, so a little plug for Scott. I think he's
Joe,
doing a nice
you've met
job.
with him, right? Haven't you? You've met
Yep. He's been
Scott.
on, yeah, he's been on the podcast a couple times. I try to bring him on when there's like kind of big juicy things he's covering. First time I brought him on just to like let people know, like, hey, there's this actual local journalism going on here in Massachusetts. And it's local journalism that's talking about, development, construction, talks about politics, but as we know, politics is a big part of development. So if you're in this business, Contrarian Boston, in my book, is a must read. I'm not giving a dime by him. I just think it's a great read, and I think Scott's doing a good job. And my preaching here. I mean, we all say, oh, there's not good local journalism left anymore. Well, if you want good lo local journalism, like you probably should support them, or you should probably think about supporting them and keeping folks like Scott going. So, big thumbs up to Scott. Last topic, uptick in Boston housing. This headline surprised me, right? And maybe that's poorly worded because it is uptick in Boston permits, housing permits. But what it came up with was cute. What it came up with, good English, Joe. What it came up with is Q1 of this year. They at by that through the end of April, they had 830 units were permitted. 75% of those permits were market rate housing. So only 25% affordable. That is up from 653 Q1 last year. So year over year, it went up 22%. So from 653 to 830. To give a little more perspective, though, 2022, there was almost 1,800 permits issued in Q1. So that's right, you know, that's a third. We're a third of what we were in 2022. Again, trying to give more context to this, 2022 was probably juiced being post-COVID, where, you know, there was probably that post-COVID bounce that was experienced in 2022. So maybe 2022 was artificially high. But even so, we're only a third of what we were there. So up 22% year over year with housing permits in Q1, only
Was this
30%.
just Boston? This was just Boston, right? Like he was
Yeah.
just.
Yep. Just Boston. I've got a bunch of thoughts on it. One is these are permits issued.
Yep.
This isn't ground broken. You know, so we've been seeing a ton of this, not just on small stuff, on bigger projects where they're pushing to get permit in hand, but not planning on starting, you know, and trying to get extensions and trying to drag things out because they want to get that, they want to get the permit in hand. So 830 units permitted. I don't know if that was because that's going to start, or if that's just people wanting to get permits in hand. And as we've seen in the past, some of this stuff can be about the BPDA,
Yeah.
right? They can either put their foot on the gas or take their foot off the gas, and that can kind of determine how many people. So I don't know if it's always demand that's doing that. So there's a lot of nuance in there.
I think, I don't know. I think this article is meant to say, look, there's a little bit of life here, but most of these projects, if you look at it, and I'm gonna. I don't know how our conversations always turn back to energy code, but it's gonna rotate back here to energy code. Most of these projects have been in the pipeline more than likely through the Board of Appeals, BPDA, application, the whole thing,
Yes.
prior to the
Three
change in the
years.
building code, right? So they're
Yep.
subject to the previous edition or iteration of the code, which gives them a little more leeway. So yeah, there is probably an uptick, from what we're seeing here. And again, you pointed out, Joe, it's things that are permitted, things that have gone through the process, which could have been 2 years, right? Could have been a year and a half. With the code, January 1st last year, and then the commercial code was July last year. With the change in code, now these projects coming online, you put the interest rates in, you put the regulations in with energy, and then Boston adding a second layer of energy. I don't know. I don't know. We've regulated out once again two competing issues. One, we need housing units allegedly in Boston in the vicinity, and two, we've put on so much regulation that we're making it difficult for people to go ahead and build these units, right? So I'm a little leery of okay, there's a light, at the end of the tunnel here, and we're going to start seeing more units being constructed. That's just my take, is we've regulated the increase, or we've regulated the ability to add the units out, essentially, is what we've done.
Joe, that on Instagram, I forwarded you that little clip about that gentleman who was installing, doing an ADU
Yeah.
in Roxbury on his property, and it took him 2 years to get through the ADU process, which, I mean, they're, trying to push more housing, ways to get more housing, and like this guy, it took him he said it took 2 years. I mean, we don't know where, right? Like, and I get a little, I guess, protective of ISD because I don't think it was all ISD that took the 2 years to make that happen for him.
Right.
But I don't
Yeah, I
know
mean, yeah, it's funny. I sometimes I laugh at that a little bit. Because I'm like,
why.
okay, we're touting this as a success story.
Yeah, like.
And the guy built a very nice unit. Like, the guy did a great job, right? The homeowner. It was a beautiful unit that he created. But if the thing is to make ADUs
Easy,
easy
like,
and as a right, and you know, if you're in this area, you can have an ADU. It
right.
just is going to take you 2 years to be able to permit it and jump through hoops and all this other stuff. Like, and that's being touted, like, hey, look at this, you know?
Yeah,
I had an ADU. It only took 2 years.
They were putting it out there like it was a success story, which, yeah, it's a nice story, but going through the 2 year torture is not great.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That, like, yeah, that's.
And most people would probably quit, right? Like, most people would say, you know, fuck this.
Yeah, I'm done. I'm not doing this.
Yeah, yeah, that's too long for me to have an in-law unit, right? Because they're not, you know, it's not bringing really that much value to the house, because it's not like you're getting a true additional unit, right?
This was detached, right? What was it? It was a detached. She was looking.
Was it detached? Well, that's different. Yeah.
I think so. Maybe that's what drove the longer process, because I think he's trying to what is it, like, airline rentals. For
you know, if we're going to be fair or kind or whatever, like, maybe these are one of the first ones, and maybe after people get used to these, they start going a little quicker. So I don't want to be all doom and gloom, but yeah, it's pretty tough to roll out there and tell out, like, oh, look at this new program where you can have a ADU. It only take 2 years, right? So the other thing that I thought about was, I was talking with an attorney early in the year, and he was telling me, and the three of us have kind of talked offline about this, that there is a lot of uptick in foreclosures, or at least there was at the time, of not necessarily buildings, but of properties. So people had, let me phrase that better, land with a permit, right?
Yep.
So land with something that was permitted, that permitted project doesn't really work anymore. They can't afford to build it as it's constituted. So it's getting foreclosed on, and people are buying up that land and then either refiling or trying to reactivate the permit. So, you know, I was hearing that beginning of this year, so maybe it was, and no, within this year, so it was in the 2023 timeframe. So that was probably going on 2023, and we might be seeing an uptick based on people scooping up those foreclosures.
Right.
Mike and I were involved with the project that that happened to, and project got foreclosed on. It was just the land with a start of a permit. And then it got, or at least someone was looking into buying the land and the permit. But to Mike's point, you start getting into the energy code stuff. So if we have to reconfigure, yeah, they were planning something bigger. Now it needs to be scaled back to make it more affordable or whatever. So I was wondering if foreclosures were part of that. And then the other thing is, are people building these? And I don't know. I don't get the feeling, and I'd like a gut check from you guys. I don't feel like I'm seeing an uptick in housing out on the street.
When you guys have been, you know, writing, I don't know, 241 plans or things like that, what have you been seeing a lot of? Has it been commercial or residential?
Probably more commercial on 241 than residential, right? Because the other thing is 241 now, the podium buildings, you know, require a significantly different 241 than the commercial. So, I think the podiums are out there and they're being built, but we've been seeing more commercial than residential.
It's been, to be honest, it's been really a mix.
Yeah.
You know, institutional stuff. Some
universe, podium,
the podium stuff has been a lot of affordable units, you know, some three family, smaller stuff, you know, general office fit outs. Ironically, a lot of office fit outs for like life science companies. So not the lab stuff, but, you know, a lot of tenant fit out type work for life sciences. So it's not like they're adding more bench space or more lab space, but and in reality, you know what? It's actually been a lot of reconfiguration of
Yeah.
In the
life
city
science.
or on the sub in the suburbs or mix?
Suburbs like Waltham. Yeah,
Not
no, a lot of
mix.
suburbs.
I think it's a mix, yeah. Actually,
Yeah.
we did have a large residential project over in Somerville that was just interesting, a reuse of an existing building.
Yes. Yeah,
Yeah.
that was even a high rise, right? It was a high
Yeah.
rise.
Reuse of an existing high rise for residential, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's been really a mix. It's not like we've been seeing a lot of one type of work coming in. So, but
All right, we're at 7:02.
good call,
Todd
Reggie.
Cantor joined today, which is a big
Yeah,
day.
I saw that. He's
Big
on
day for
Instagram
us.
now. Andy joined. I gotta call him right after this anyway on the project, but that is amazing.
Beautiful. All
Amazing.
right. See you guys
All
next
right.
week.
Catch you next
Bye,
time.
guys.